Welcome to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Loose Customs, a division of J. Walton Automotive, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, Driver's Den, Indian Motorcycle of Albuquerque, Bobby J's Yamaha, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Your host, David Swope, will be talking about events happening around the state and on the national scene. Whether it's got two wheels or four wheels, pavement and off-road racing, or park and shine. If you are into it, we are into it. Call now, 994-1017. That's 994-1017 to get into all the action. Now, here's your host, David Swope.
Good morning. It's Saturday morning, and that means it's time for the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. I'm your host, David Swope, and we're talking about automotive and related motorsports activities around the state and on the national scene. Whether it has two wheels or four, asphalt or dirt track racing, park and shine, we'll be talking about it. This is New Mexico's only show devoted to motorsports-related activities with a full hour here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. And for your Memorial Day pleasure, we thought we'd have a little bit of fun with a comparison and contrast between Formula One and NASCAR. So joining us both from ESPN.com is Tom McKeon and Matt Willis. How you guys doing?
Doing good today. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good. I'm doing real good.
And I don't need to hear how Tom's doing. So
how you doing, Tom?
Matt, good to hear from you too, man.
All right. So I always like to get you guys on for your insight and stuff. And it's kind of funny because you guys work like with each other, and yet you cover such different things, even though it falls under the motorsport. So actually, kind of like to start with Matt. How'd you kind of first come to fall in love with NASCAR?
You know what? I was one of those kids that loved every sport that was out there, and included just starting watching NASCAR with some friends, and just kind of got into it. And then the more I got into it, the more I kind of realized that it wasn't a sport that a lot of people specialized in terms of like statistics and things like that. So ESPN picked up the NASCAR contract in 2006, just as I was graduating from college, and it was one thing led to another, and I came in.
That's fantastic. How about you, Tom? How did your love for Formula One start?
It actually, funny enough, started with NASCAR in the late 90s. I mean, as a kid growing up in the United States, it became so accessible. Stock car racing was on every weekend. I didn't truly get into Formula One until later on, mid-2000s, late-2000s. It was actually when I started working at ESPN as a researcher alongside Matt. I saw an opportunity to kind of write on a weekly basis about Formula One and using statistics, which you don't see a lot of that angle being covered. So I pitched that to .com, and they ran with it. So that's really how I got into it.
Well, that's fantastic. So I'm going to pitch you guys against each other, so you can, make your pros and cons for each of the different series. And I thought that the first thing we would actually start with is the starts. And the reason being is, and Tom, I'll have you go first, the last race in Spain, you have the two leading contenders, two leaders in points, basically, take each other out in turn one, and that is a mortal sin. And we're going to come back to NASCAR in just a minute as to where they'd like to take each other out. And we're going to talk about the race at the All-Star race or even the race at Dover where they contact actually might have been what the fans want. So, Tom, let's talk about the starts first with Formula One. What is it that you like most about the particular format on the starts for Formula One?
Spain brought out the best of the F1 start procedure, and arguably the worst for the two Mercedes drivers, but you cannot take out your teammate. But I love the starts. And they were actually thinking of making these standing restarts when the pace car came off, but they ended up mixing that, possibly bringing that this year, but it doesn't look like it will happen in the near future. I love it just because it does decide so, it is so important to your race. If you get bogged down and you lose five places, you're in huge trouble. Your strategy completely is wiped out. You have to think of something completely new to be competitive now. So all that preparation can be wiped away in just a couple of seconds. And they made it harder now with the clutch, how you start, less reliant on the car, more reliant on the driver, which is awesome.
Yeah, and there's, like you said, a fair amount of contact takes people out. It was just amazing to see both of them go out early. So talk a little bit about, you know, the starts that you've got with NASCAR.
Yeah, I mean, with the rolling starts that they have coming to the caution flag, I love the change they made a couple years ago, replicating how they start the races going side by side with how they restart after cautions. I think some of the best racing you see in any race is right off the caution when everyone's jockeying for position. The only problem with that is, you know, you have the regular controversy of, you know, did the second place car beat the leader to the line and,
right.
And have to see if, you know, who has to, you know, if a penalty has to be served, when it could in reality just be because the leader spun their tires on the restart, couldn't get up to speed right. I like a lot what Formula One does where they, with the standing start. I don't think you can do that with a stock car, but I think, in due time, I think, it, you know, a system in which, you know, the leader doesn't necessarily start the race, but, you know, a green light or just the starter dropping the green flag would restart the race, or for the start of the race might be the, you know, the preferential. You know, you hate to see a race decided by a ruling on a restart about whether a guy spun his tires or who beat who to the restart zone, which already is a pretty foggy area. So I think that rule needs to get adjusted down the line, you know, because you just don't want to see the race get decided by a controversial ruling rather than a set, you know, a set starting procedure.
Well, and a restart is tricky enough. All you got to do is watch the restart in Dover, in which we, you know, had some breakage from Johnson, and basically everybody plowed into him and took a bunch of cars out. So, you know, I mean, that it is awfully risky all the way around to, you know, try and play those games on the restart. Talk a little bit about the All-Star race and the restart that was involved in that.
Specifically
the pill draw. I mean, they kind of did that, you know, old school dirt track. Tried to create some more fan interest.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting having the inversion. I think it would have been a little more fun if we had a few more cars still running on the lead lap. You know, Kyle Busch and Jimmie Johnson were sitting ducks, but with a really short segment, I could see that. That was really cool, especially for an exhibition race, you know, that's not for points or a chase berth, although, you know, $1 million is nothing to sneeze at. But, I liked what they did with the inversion on the final start, and making a few cars pit. And, while it seemed like there was a lot of confusion around the whole race format, I think at the end, once we had solved for X, I liked what they did on the final start.
Absolutely. Okay. The biggest line in NASCAR, of course, is if you're not rubbing, you're not racing. Tom, talk a little bit about why there should not be any rubbing in open-wheel racing.
It's just so much different. I can appreciate both. I love both. But if you go wheel-to-wheel in F1, you're going to be in trouble. Chances are not only you, but the person who you ran into, too. Look at Danny Kvyat in Russia when he plows through Sebastian Vettel. Vettel gets the worst of that. He's out of the race, but Kvyat just ruined his own race, too. His whole front wing is torn up, has to come into the pits. It's over for him. Not only does he lose that, he loses his ride, and he's with Toro Rosso now. So, costly mistake. But that's a perfect example of how bad it can be for both people. These cars are just so technically sound, so lightweight, so fragile. You'll see it in Monaco, there's going to be collisions, there's going to be wrecks, and very few of those cars are going to be able to come back in the pits and come back out, unless it's only damage to the front wing, which they can easily replace. The rest of the car, you're not going to be able to salvage.
Absolutely. So, Matt, talk about a lot of the discussion with, was Kyle Larson not aggressive enough in moving Matt Kenseth out of the way at Dover?
Yeah, I love the contact that we see in NASCAR, and I know Kyle Larson said he wanted to win his first race the right way, and Ryan McGee told a great story about talking to Ted Musgrave about the time he was running at Darlington, didn't want to get to Dale Jarrett and rough him up at all for the win. Well, Ted Musgrave, zero career Cup Series wins. That win would have made all the difference in his, you know, career. Maybe wouldn't spur him to championship runs, but, you know, forever, when you're a Cup winner, you're a Cup winner for life. And I hope it doesn't get to a case where Kyle Larson is looking back at that in 5-6 years and wondering if that was his only shot at a win and only shot at a chase berth. I don't think it is, given how crazy talented Kyle Larson is. And seeing him battle with Chase Elliott for second and then with Matt Kenseth for first was a lot of fun at that race. I like the physical racing, and I think it's, you know, racing should be a little bit of a context for it. Maybe not, you know, at 100 laps into the race, but maybe with 5 laps to go. I think it's all cards on the table.
So do you think from an American perspective, with, you know, with all the other ball and stick sports that we have, in which contact is actually a part of the sport, do you think that that helps that kind of translate it with Americans and understanding NASCAR more?
I think so. I think, you know, based on what, you know, the European model you see in racing, that, you know, when you've watched that your entire life and you go and watch NASCAR, you're thinking, what are these maniacs doing out there? They're all over each other. And, you know, the cars aren't nearly as delicate little flowers like they are in Formula One. I like it a lot. You know, everything has a time and a place. But yeah, I think with the overall more physical nature of, you know, the stick and ball sports we see, although, you know, you have your fair amount of contact in soccer, but you also have
right.
the, there's a flopping joke in there somewhere, but
yes.
I think it's night and day when you've only watched one for your entire life, and it will take you some time to appreciate the different forms of racing.
Well, another thing that's pretty significant is how sponsors interact with the teams and with the cars. A good example is we had a race earlier this year in which Subway was, you know, competing against Jimmy John's, you know, up at the lead. And so there was actually a joke about which car is going to win, the Jimmy John's or the Subway car. Talk a little bit about how, you know, how that all kind of fits into it, Matt. I mean, you know, brings more fans to the sport.
You know, it was funny. I was just thinking about this the other day with the, you know, there's some controversy with the 76ers putting logos on their uniforms.
Right.
I'm like, you guys haven't been watching NASCAR. That sport is all about, you'll root for a car based on, you know, the product it represents, or vice versa. You'll be loyal to a product based on the driver that represents that brand. And I think, you know, Richard Petty is just as famous for the 43 as he is for STP. I think one of those things are just ingrained together. You know, and a great highlight, you get to see that sponsor in commercials for years in advance. So it's such a great long-term investment for these sponsors to get connected to a driver that has brand loyalty. You know, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Mountain Dew. I'm a big fan of Mountain Dew. My family loves, you know, Jr. You know, there's such a positive association with the brands of both the brand of the product and the brand of the driver.
Well, and I mean, you brought up Mountain Dew. I know that there's been this ongoing discussion between the two of you. Have you settled what the best new flavor of Mountain Dew is?
Tom, I'll let you take that one, and then I'll give you the correct answer. I'll give you the correct answer after Tom goes.
I find it insulting that Baja Blast even needs to go up against something to secure its long-term future. Let me just put that out there right now. Fantastic. I, in fairness, never tried Pitch Black, but I don't think it even matters. I think Baja Blast is going to be the one you see in stores for the rest of the year.
Wow.
Here's what I'm thinking is you can walk into a Taco Bell right now and get yourself a nice Baja Blast. I can't go into Taco Bell and get a Pitch Black. If you like the variety of the flavors like I do, you know, I think your vote's for Pitch Black, and hope that, you know, you can still get your Baja Blast with your with, you know, a quesadilla or some sort of nachos. I mean,
well,
it's all
pretty,
good there.
I'm pretty lazy, though. I mean, I want to be going everywhere. And you know what? Actually, a friend just told me they saw Livewire in a store somewhere. How about that?
I just had a Livewire the other day, and if I had a vote between Livewire and those other two, I'm giving my vote to Livewire.
Agreed.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you now. Okay, so in Formula One, little to no sponsorship. I mean, why does that work in NASCAR and not work in Formula One?
I think the top teams in F1 can rely so much on the constructive payouts at the end of the year, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yep.
And they can afford, so many of these are factory-backed teams, they can afford to do it. And you see, even the back-end teams, the back-market teams, have a lot of times pay drivers, where drivers pay to get those seats. So it is a form of sponsorship right there. Yeah, it's not as common. That's what makes F1 a little harder to relate to. We were talking earlier about maybe the popularity of NASCAR in America, and think of the roots. Think of where it came from. It was literally taking stock cars and souping them up. We can all relate to that. You know, we all have cars that you could turn into a stock car and race if you really wanted to. F1 is just so born when it comes to that. It's cars that we've never driven, cars that we only dream of. So it's completely different in that aspect. And with the sponsorships, yeah, I mean, you talk NASCAR, you think, you can't think STP without thinking Richard Petty. You can't think Goodrich without thinking Dale Earnhardt. But, you know, even until a couple of years ago, in F1, drivers didn't even have a set number every year. So it was, they were bouncing around everywhere.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, guys. And we got to, and we'll come back and we'll settle a few other discussions. And then we're going to actually have a vote and see if we can decide, which is more popular, Formula One or NASCAR. We've got a whole lot more coming up here on the New Mexico Motorsports Report on ESPN Radio, 101.7 The Team.
Experience the Unser Racing tradition here in New Mexico. The Unser Racing Museum is a multi-dimensional museum experience utilizing modern technologies to educate and immerse the visitor in the exciting world of racing. Open daily 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit again today, UnserRacingMuseum.com.
The pit stop is now over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report and get things revved up with your phone calls at 994-1017. That's 994-1017. Now, back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Loose Customs, a division of J. Walton Automotive, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, Driver's Den, Indian Motorcycle of Albuquerque, Bobby J's Yamaha, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Here is David.
Welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 Team, and we're trying to settle a debate, Formula One versus NASCAR. We brought in two experts from ESPN.com to try and help us settle this out. That's Matt Willis, is the NASCAR beat writer, and we got Tom McKeon, that's the Formula One beat writer. And so, guys, Tom, you had actually started to talk about this a little bit of the comparison of the cars, the exotic, you know, versus the showroom. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, my thoughts totally is, I see them as two completely different things. I mean, you've also got kind of the ovals versus the road course. So I'll let you kind of, Tom, let you kind of finish a little bit more on, you know, the connection, the sports car connection to Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to see the roots of F1 and how it's considered a pretty rich sport. Now, the fan base is significantly different. Cars are obviously significantly different. They're putting out about the same amount of power,
right?
You know, 750, 800 horsepower. But and until recently, they were both running V8s, and now F1 has gone to the V6 turbos. I would like to see them go back to V8s. They just made such a better sound, and I know that's what fans were complaining a lot about when they made the switch a couple of years ago. It's so different. Being at the start of a NASCAR race and you have now 40 cars all starting at once, you know, you have over 30,000 horsepower and just the actual sound, how loud it is, with F1 is just very, very different. But hey, I can say I love both of them. I love watching both of them. One thing I will say for F1, I do like they only have 20 or 21 races every year. 36 is just a little too much for me.
Absolutely. Talk about, Matt, talk about win on Sunday, sell on Monday.
Yeah, you know, the history of NASCAR really started around the, you know, it was the cars you could actually just go, you know, like you said, the car that went on a Sunday, you could go and buy one that just looked just like it Monday at, you know, your local dealership. Now there's, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference between a Chevy and a Ford and a Toyota on the track, and it's, you know, you lose a little bit, like the nose and and just the overall look of the car. I remember, you know, it was only 20 years ago when it seemed like there would be monthly or even weekly changes when, you know, the Fords got technological advantage and the Chevys had a little bit and they were trying to even it out. And it was a little more of the battle between Chevy and Ford on a weekly basis and, you know, the occasional Pontiac thrown in and occasional Dodge thrown in. Now there's a lot of uniformity with the cars and, you know, it's pretty much the box and, you know, it's hard to remember even sometimes, you know, what's the name plate they run on the cars, you know, and, you know, you see more teams switching allegiances. You're going to see Stuart Haas going to Ford and Joe Gibbs has bounced around. And there's really not a whole lot of teams that have stayed consistent with one manufacturer through years. I think it's Childress and Hendrick and Roush Fenway have stayed with theirs. But other than that, there's been a lot of jumping around. So, you know, what it was 20, 30 years ago, and even more so when you get back, you know, 50 years ago, you don't have quite that brand identity that you used to with the cars.
Well, I totally agree. And now Toyota, finally getting their first Daytona 500 victory, and you know, having Toyota in the mix there, because we don't talk as much about constructors as you do in Formula One. Formula One names like Mercedes and Ferrari. You know, talk about a little bit about the nationalism, Tom. You know, that people feel towards the makes.
I mean, I can speak to this personally now with Haas F1 being in the game.
Right.
I'm proud to root for them every week. I'm proud to be following them, following the news. I'm so excited when they finished sixth and fifth to start the year. Very cool. There is some pride in that. And it is kind of like the whole manufacturer game, though. It is getting more blended. You know, it's Force India truly an Indian team, where they really, an English team. They have most of their base and operations in England. It's like any car manufacturer you see. Toyota has plants in America. Volkswagen has plants in Mexico. It's all becoming more and more diluted. But, say for a couple of the top teams like Ferrari, there's no doubt where they came from and where they still are. So that is pretty cool to see a team like Ferrari stay so true to its roots. Hopefully we'll have that for a long time to come, and some of these other teams really creating a brand for themselves.
Well, and I think this is a perfect segue back to you, Matt, and to talk about the sharing of information now between teams based on the manufacturer they're with.
Yeah, it's you see a lot more, deals now between teams, and you have not only the teams with their four car limits, but then the satellite teams, and now even, certain cases where a team like Stuart Haas, which is a Hendrick satellite team, has its own satellite team in H. Scott Racing. So you have the four car limits, but really it's a pretty wide spread between who's working with who, when you get, eight, nine, 10 car conglomerations that are working together. I remember, it was, 25 years ago or so, they added Mike Skinner to Dale Earnhardt's team, and they didn't want to share any information.
Yeah.
Earnhardt rejected the idea of having a teammate, and I've heard stories talking to Ricky Craven about, how guarded Jeff Gordon and Ray Evernham were with the equipment on the 24 when, they were there, and you saw the spread of the, the talent on the Gordon team and the Terry Labonte team and the Ricky Craven team. So now it's, it's a much more of a team aspect. When before it was, a loose affiliation, teams are coming out of the same garage, but that was about all they had in common.
Well, and I think one of the big things, that's absolutely right. I think that sharing the information and protecting the information for that edge. But one of the things that I find, fascinating between the two is there's no American drivers in Formula One. There's barely any foreign drivers in NASCAR. I mean, you almost got to look to Xfinity, before you find a foreign driver. And I think that fits into it a little bit, what probably turns, Americans off from following Formula One quite as much. Talk to that. I mean, Alexander Rossi was great, having in Formula One last year. Now look what he's doing over at Indy. I mean, it's going to be fascinating. I have a little more interest in watching him this year at Indy. Tom, what are your thoughts on the Americans being turned off by no American drivers in Formula One?
Yeah, if you're American, you really need an American driver in the sport. It helps so much to just identify. And it was so cool when, you hear about Rossi coming up. I think I saw him at Lime Rock Park way back when, and now he's coming up and racing in F1. I really thought he would get a chance this year too, but I think there is a future for him in F1. You really do need someone though, because it is that blend just really hasn't happened between NASCAR and F1, where you see a lot of foreign-born drivers competing in NASCAR. I mean, what, Matt, there's fewer than half a dozen winners that were foreign-born in the sport in Sprint Cup. Same, goes for, F1. There are not a lot of American winners, especially in the past, 30 odd years,
yep,
since the mid 80s.
Yeah, you had Kimi Raikkonen come over, and he ran, a couple of truck races, and that was it. And there's rumors that, Grosjean's going to come over, try to run one of the road course races this year. But the crossover is something I think is really lacking, and used to have a little bit of that with, the IROC series, but that wasn't really a Formula One series. That was more about IndyCar and World of Outlaws and the trucks and Xfinity running together. I would love to see these guys kind of match up in some form in the future, but right now it's just so separated, and so this is the American Racing Series and this is the rest of the world's racing series, and that's kind of it. I think that's what it is.
You know, another major contrast is fan access. I mean, Formula One, it was funny because they did a pullback in a panoramic shot, and you could really see where the line of demarcation of people that were around the cars before the start. Whereas in NASCAR, I mean, they literally have to usher people back into the seats because of the level of access they get. I think that's one thing that Formula One probably could learn from NASCAR. What are your thoughts on that, Tom?
One thing I can really say to that is I completely agree because it is so restricted and guarded. And I mentioned Lime Rock Park before. I used to go up every year for the American Le Mans Series. And one of the best aspects of that series was the access. You could go into the paddock. There were driver autograph signings for a good hour or two. You can walk the grid right before the race. The cars are all out there sitting there. You can go even touch the cars if you wanted to. The drivers are standing there. It is so cool. And people can just identify so much better with that than being kind of behind the glass, behind the velvet rope, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
I think anytime you can make the races more accessible, especially for NASCAR, where you have your choice of a couple of tracks you go to for the most part. It's not so... in Formula One, you're going to get one race a year, and, that's such a special occasion. In NASCAR, I live in Connecticut. I could go see the race at Watkins Glen. I can go to New Hampshire. I can go to Dover. I can go to Pocono. All those races are pretty accessible, and that's, a half dozen races I can attend during the year. In Formula One, your country might have one race a year, or, you might. So I think even having that ability for fans to get in there could make it even more special but NASCAR, it needs that fan access because the series, returns to the same sites every year and oftentimes twice a year. And if you don't catch that one, you can catch the one that's, a 4 or 5 hour drive away. So they need to do something to really make it even a bigger experience for the fans. And I think NASCAR does a really good job of doing that and making it a very fan friendly and accessible sport.
Absolutely. Okay. Another big difference is basically the way the ownership and the rules are built. Tom, we've talked many times have I complained about Bernie Ecclestone the rules and the way that he has control over everything. I mean, talk a little bit about the inflexibility that is Formula One.
Bernie, yes, we've had many conversations over him. Matt, you think NASCAR is indecisive? Just come on over to Formula One. We'll show you a great time over here. I mean, you look at the qualifying rules this year. It was absurd.
Yep.
You think about a sport that is on really the pinnacle of worldwide motorsports, and they can't decide on the qualifying rules when, granted, qualifying is probably the most exciting aspect of the series. And they try to change it. They pretty much ruin it for two races. Wanted to go to another system, finally go back to the old system. So, hey, where do we end up? At the same place we started when there are so many other issues in the sport. So it is very tough as a fan sometimes because you're just led down this road where you don't like what you see. It's all restricted with teams having to vote on a lot of different things, and we're just at the whim of what Bernie wants to do a lot of the time. It can be... a very negative aspect of, what I think overall is a great sport.
Matt, what are your thoughts on, a complete contrast of the drivers actually having some say in the rules?
NASCAR's really embraced that, with the fan, with the driver council, Denny Hamlin's lead, and they do take a lot of input from the drivers, which I think is positive. It's, happy drivers make for better racing, and better racing makes for, better attendance, better ratings, And we have seen a lot of change this year, a lot of input taken in on the cars themselves, and the racing has gotten a lot better, and there's a lot more passing, a lot more side-by-side racing. I really like what NASCAR is doing now. In making this more of a driver-friendly sport to go along with being a fan-friendly sport.
Absolutely. Okay, so I think that we're pretty much tied on both sides, in one area, the exotic cars versus the showroom, you've got the, benefits on both sides of the starts, American versus foreign. So I don't know. I kind of wanted to come down to maybe the tiebreak being where would you rather be this weekend? Would you rather be in Monaco or would you rather be in Charlotte?
That's a dirty question.
I love it. I love it. So, David, you got that check I sent you. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
You know what? Given the choice of, you know, Charlotte this time of year, I do like Carolina barbecue or, you know, Monte Carlo, casinos, beautiful women, beaches. I'm going to go Monte Carlo.
Awesome. And, Tom, I think I know your answer, but go for it.
Yeah, I'm going to safely say Monaco in this one. Not going to be too tough to decide that one. As lovely as Charlotte is.
Yeah. Tom, are they sending you the Monaco this week for work?
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah, I was going to say, and none of us, by the way, are going to Monaco this weekend. So
yeah.
apparently, we don't have quite the money to go do that. Hey, I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I appreciate you guys coming on. I hope you have a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend. I really appreciate you guys coming on and debating Formula One versus NASCAR.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
All
absolutely,
right.
Man.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you guys again soon. We got a whole lot more coming up on the New Mexico Motorsports Report exclusively on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team.
David Swope here with the New Mexico Motorsports Report. When it comes to car audio and security, there's only Driver's Den. Top sound equipment by Alpine, backup cameras and Bluetooth. Driver's Den on Eubank at Constitution, 293-8211, driversdenabq.com.
The pit stop is now over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report and get things revved up with your phone calls at 994-1017. That's 994-1017. Now, back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Loose Customs, a division of J. Walton Automotive, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, Driver's Den, Indian Motorcycle of Albuquerque, Bobby J's Yamaha, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Here is David.
All right, so we're getting ready to celebrate the 100th running of the Indy 500. And joining us this morning is Al Unser. How you doing this morning?
Good, David. And you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, when you think about it, I mean, the Indy 500, 100 years of running there. I mean, it's got to be amazing to be involved in some major victories at such a illustrious place.
It is, David. You know, to be able to say 100th year, it's hard to understand. You know, it now it's easy for me to say 100 years.
Right.
But back when I first went there, if you'd asked me, you know, are you going to be around when there's a 100th year race? I'd have said, David, come on. I'm lucky to be here.
Right.
But it's really great. You know, I think that Indianapolis is, again, the greatest spectacle in racing. And, you know, the people are able to see a race that is unbelievable. Pit work, strategy of fuel stops and all that. So it's really a race.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, of course, your family has 9 victories there. So, I mean, it's such a part of your family. Talk about maybe some of your earliest memories of the Indianapolis 500.
Well, you know, David, I think when, you know, I was growing up here in Albuquerque started wanting a race, Indianapolis was the big goal that I wanted to go to. And you never know whether you're able to or not, whether you have the ability, the smarts. How do you put the sponsors together? How do you do the whole team? How do you get car owners to hire you? And things like that. And you know, things just kind of go along and you work at this and work at that. And all of a sudden, there you are. You're walking in the gates at the Indianapolis 500. And I looked around and I says, oh, man, I can't believe they'd ever put this many people
right
in a place.
Right.
I mean, there was back then, that was in 1965, and I looked at all the grandstands, and now there's twice as many grandstands, you know, as there was then almost. And it's just amazing you say, boy, I hope I'm able to make this race. I hope they let me pass my rookie test and all that. Things back then were a lot different than they are today. The rookie tests today are very simple and easy because the cars are so well handling today. Back then, you didn't know what kind of car that you were going to have. You know, everybody had different cars. You barely had teammates back then. You were just one-on-one, you know. So things were a lot different, and the handling of the cars, each car always handled different because it was made by a different designer and everything. So things were a lot different than they are today. You know, you if you had a team back, say, in the early 65s or late 60s, you know, maybe you had three people working on the cars. Today you have 15, 20 people. And, you know, whether they're any good or not, that's another story sometimes. You know, you say, well, what teams are the best? Well, you got to look at the drivers and you got to look at the team and you say, well, this team is the greatest because it's won the most races and so on down the line. But it's not easy to go to Indianapolis.
Well, and if you think about it, in a way, the Indianapolis 500 almost kind of mirrors the evolution of the automobile. I mean, when the
yes.
automobile came out, it was a proving ground. It was a place, you know, to test different innovations, all the way to, you know, you could extrapolate to where we are now, where the car is basically, I mean, at all the, you know, the car shows and the expos now, there, you know, I mean, there's iPods and entertainment and all kinds of stuff built into the car
yep.
to where, you know, I mean, it's basically a people mover, if you will. And I joked the other day about, you know, it's basically driving an iPod now. And and if you think about it, what you just described with the racing and how, you know, the engineers are looking in and the guys don't even look at all the gauges and, you know, because the information feedback is so instantaneous. And yet, you know, it's so interesting that the history of Indy is almost, you know, I mean, kind of the history of the automobile.
It really is, David. It today there's, you know, we call them spec cars.
Right.
They're all spec cars now, spec engines, supposedly.
Right.
They're not supposed to be any difference from one Chevy engine to another one or one Honda to another Honda. But there is a difference in why they, you know, that's the secret of the engine companies, and that's the secret of the teams keeping it quiet. You know, they're all the same. Well, they're not, because there's some of them run faster down the straightaway
right.
and go through the corner the same speed, because it's a wide open racetrack now. It's not like when I first went back there, we backed off way down the straightaway, more or less. And today you just run around there wide open. When I last won there, I won, you know, run the race car many times during the day, wide open around that racetrack. And that's just, when I first went back there, that was unheard of. You know, if you ever told anybody that you were going to run wide open around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, they'd put you in the nut house.
Wow.
You know, and it wasn't there and it wasn't going to happen. Well, it is today because of the engineering, the development of cars, tires, engines, and engineers, I guess, designers. But there's only one designer and two designers in the car business, you know. So yeah. How do you determine that?
Well, in a way, that was a whole can of worms that you just kind of opened there. Because back in the day, I mean, aero would make all the difference in the world, because it wasn't about, I mean, you could put the horsepower down. As a matter of fact, you know, they did everything they could, going to V6 and everything, turbocharged, trying to bring those speeds down, but then you didn't have the overtaking speed, you know, to where, you know, where you're in a situation yeah. where you can overtake somebody. My question to you is, has the spec, if you will, really made the racing any better?
Well, I don't think it has, David. Yeah. I mean, it's not as safe as at one time when we had it. We didn't have the safety barriers back then, but the safety today is such that the driver runs around there wide open, and if anything happens, he doesn't have time enough to gather his thoughts up, nor the car up, without hitting the wall. And that's what makes it so dangerous now. But yet, with all the safety methods as they have built into the cars, you know, the headrests, the seats, the carbon fiber bodies and all that are just a lot safer today, and there's not near the fuel loads as we used to carry. We used to carry 75 gallons of fuel. Today they carry 25 gallons. is all, see. And they, it tickles me when you talk to the drivers. They say, oh, this car really handles bad with a full fuel load. I said, well, how much is a full load of fuel? Well, 25 gallons. I says, put 75 in it and let's see what kind of man you are.
Wow.
75, they don't even know what we're talking about, say. But it's different today. You know, the cars are, I keep saying, safer they are. But yet, they're more dangerous because they never have time to think about backing off or getting on the brakes.
Yeah. Has it gotten too fast?
I don't think it has. If you say, well, you know, if you back up in years, we used to run down the straightaway the same speed as they do today.
Right.
But yet we didn't go through the corners as fast as you do today. So if you back down the corner speed, I say that it's going to stay pretty close to the same. And I think that the drivers have a better chance of saving the car when the mistake is made. And when a mistake is made today, the way the rules read, they just hit the fence. And they get out of the car and they say, what happened? You newscasters, you put a mic in front of you and you say, what happened? You know, I really don't know what happened. I hit the wall.
Go to the New Mexico Motorsports Report.com to hear the rest of this interview. Stay tuned for more of the New Mexico Motorsports Report on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. Somewhere there's a strip of asphalt wishing it could be a cloud of dust, a hairpin turn begging to be ridden, and an open highway waiting for you to begin your story. The road is calling. Answer it by heading to Indian Motorcycle of Albuquerque for deals on exceptional bikes and make this riding season your best. Wherever your adventure takes you, make sure you keep your ride safe. Join us in celebrating Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month with a special event at Indian Motorcycle of Albuquerque on May 14th. Be legendary. See dealer for detail. Always wear a helmet, never drink and ride.
The pit stop is now over. Let's return to the New Mexico Motorsports Report and get things revved up with your phone calls at 994-1017. That's 994-1017. Now, back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report, presented by Napa Auto Parts, Loose Customs, a division of J. Walton Automotive, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, Driver's Den, Indian Motorcycle of Albuquerque, Bobby J's Yamaha, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine. Here is David.
All right, welcome back to the New Mexico Motorsports Report. Hope you're enjoying your Memorial Day weekend and have marked down to get out to the second annual Officer Craig Binner Memorial Car Show. And joining us is Ronnie DeBose with NAPA. How are you doing this morning, Ronnie?
Hey, doing fine, David. Good morning.
Yeah, well, I can't believe it's a year since the tragedy of losing Officer Binner last year. And I'm glad to see that the Memorial Car Show continues to go. And talk a little bit about the festivities today.
We've got a lot of things going on. If you remember last year, it really kind of blew up on us, so we tried to plan it a little better here. But we've got a car show going on. We're raising money for the Rio Rancho Police Department in the honor of Officer Binner, of course. And so we've got several things we're doing. We're doing a raffle for a nice big Napa toolbox. So all your raffle entries, $1 per entry, will go towards, all the proceeds will go towards the Rio Rancho Police Department. We're also going to be selling bottles of Napa water. And again, that'll be $1 a bottle. And again, all those proceeds will be going to the Rio Rancho Police Department. We also have our rock and roll tools truck out there. Again, if you want the candy store of tools and equipment, if you're a tool and equipment person, come on out. This thing's awesome to see. Not to include all the cars we have out here, food we have, and several other things going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is amazing, that tool truck. As a matter of fact, I think you guys are doing kind of like a trade-in, too, like a tool trade-in. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, DeWalt, which is one of the premium brands of, electronics and cordless tools. We do have a trade-in program going on. Bring in, any of your old electric tools with cords or cordless tools that you just don't use anymore, and you can get trade-in value for a variety of different DeWalt products. And, one of the ones we have in the ad right there is after a mail-in rebate, that 20-volt driver kit, where you get two
absolutely.
Batteries, $99. That's a heck of a deal. I bought one of those last year, and I tell you, I just use that thing all the time.
Well, you got all kinds of stuff that are on sale. I mean, a lot of electronics as well, that portable power bank. And I mean, you can even get a backup camera for your car for like under $70. I mean, the whole kit's pretty cool. But I tell you one thing that just blows me away. When was the last time you saw a quart of oil for 99 cents?
It's been an awful long time. You know, I can remember 30 years ago we used to do that. And we put it in there, you know, and we're just trying to give back to the community a little bit and give everybody an opportunity to buy in Napa oil at a very, very good price on a one-day sale. We also have our synthetic oil on sale for $2.99, you know, if you're a synthetic user. But that's for the conventional oil, and you're right, you don't see that often. And antifreeze for $3.99, that's well below market price. And, you know, we're just trying to, again, put some good specials out there to support the Rio Rancho community and have them come out and hopefully support the Rio Rancho Police Department with some donations.
Well, and how's the new location going? I mean, you only moved, like, across the street, but you know, like, at least doubled or tripled in size.
Yeah, no, again, we added a lot of inventory in that store. Our sales have been up quite a bit. You know, our retail business has been good. It's certainly a much better retail location for us. Being in the shopping center, parking's better. Again, beautiful sales area, good team there. We just want to continue to put ourselves out there, letting people know we support Rio Rancho, we support Albuquerque, we support you know, all the organizations that we can here in town as Napa Auto Parts. And, you know, we'll also be having the Rock and Roll Tool Truck at our Juan Thibault store, which we moved last year, on June 2nd. And then we'll be doing a grand opening on June 4th at that location as well.
Yeah, and I'll actually be out there. We'll be live from 11 to 1. So I invite you to come by and check that out. But we got the Indy 500 coming up tomorrow. And Alexander Rossi is going to be wearing the blue and yellow. So you've got an American driver with the Napa making a return to the Indy 500.
It's been an awful long time since we've done anything with IndyCar. And, you know, with one of our sister companies, Ball Camp, we put that sponsorship together and, you know, puts a little added interest in that race, you know, to see what the Napa car might be able to do.
Well, in the 100th running, I mean, it's one, I just read it, it's a complete sellout now.
Yeah.
It's standing room only sold out, but it's going to be quite an event. And, of course, you know, tomorrow is a big, big racing day. It starts, you know, in Monaco, the Indy 500, and ends with the Coke 600. So it's going to be pretty cool. But going on today, I mean, you guys are going to be doing free food from 11 to 1. You got the Rock and Roll Tool Truck and an opportunity to come out and check out some really cool cars. I always, you know, am amazed at, you know, people that listen that don't really know where the store is. Just give a quick description of where the Rio Rancho store is.
The Hilltop Shopping Center. You know, if you look back behind the Wests and the Hastings,
right.
We're back in that corner where it used to be formerly a JC Tile company, and it was a Walgreens at one point, but we're in that end cap just there in the back, just right across the street from Intel on Sarah Road.
All right. Well, hey, Ronnie, appreciate you coming in this morning, and invite everybody and head out now. I mean, the car show really gets started at 9, so if you're heading that way now, you'll make it just on time, so it'd be great. But thank you for coming in this morning, Ronnie.
Yeah, come on out. Beautiful day.
Awesome. You've been listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team.
Thank you for listening to the New Mexico Motorsports Report presented by Napa Auto Parts, Loose Customs, a division of J. Walton Automotive, Yearwood Performance, ABQ Dragway, Driver's Den, Indian Motorcycle of Albuquerque, Bobby J's Yamaha, the Unser Racing Museum, and the New Mexico Rods and Rides Magazine here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. Join us again next week where your host David Swope will be talking about events happening around the state and on the national scene, whether it's got two wheels or four wheels, pavement and off-road racing, or park and shine. If you are into it, we are into it.